Okay, well, I'm speaking with Peter Hill. We shall move on, Peter, into this section. So that was really quite fascinating hearing about how scouting really was your introduction to Wivenhoe social life, something which we all need, some entry route. And you've touched upon really the opportunities that it then granted you, I think just in a very sort of social aspect. So meeting people, new ideas coming your way. What people around the town must know you for, Peter. So Peter Hill, people must know you. Your 25 years service, which is a hell of a time, with Wivenhoe Town Council. So when did that start, please, and what were the circumstances?
In 1983 was when I got elected onto the Town Council, and I mentioned the name of Betsy Gresby just now. She was the person who had suggested that I would make a good councillor. She was the person that I was blame for putting the idea in my mind. Blame in a nice sort of way. I think I've enjoyed my time as a town councillor. A name from the past is Topsy Jennings. Topsy was very much a person who was associated with the Conservatives, and so it was through my knowing Topsy a little bit. Topsy got me involved as a Conservative member on the council. I've never seen the town council as a political movement. But I think it's quite helpful. There are people with different political persuasions on the council, because I think it means we have people with a different political backgrounds, different viewpoints, and that means that we are in a better position when we debate things, that we're not all single-minded or like-minded about something. I think it's healthy to be able to discuss things from different viewpoints, and as a consequence, I think we have better counselling, and that's what I've enjoyed about the council. It's a chance to get things done. It's not a waffle shop. It's a place that you can put ideas forward, and that's what I've managed to do. And so I've enjoyed over 25 years as a councillor. The other thing which was very transformational from my point of view was Wivenhoe Carnival. Let me just mention that one before I forget about it, because that was quite big in the 1983 time. And let me mention another name, that Peter Overton, who was kind of inspirational with the youth club. He was the warden at the Wivenhoe Centre when the Wivenhoe Centre was, Philip Road Centre was, before it became what it is today. And I have a memory of Peter Overton having got three floats together one year to be a carnival, and proudly walking up the high street with these three floats behind him. Invited me down together with a number of other people in the town from representing different organisations, and said, let's have a better carnival next year. And he then kind of disappeared out and left the meeting, and we ended up starting to talk about the meeting. And it was Stan Croucher who was elected the first chairman of the Wivenhoe Carnival, as it became. But I took over and ran Carnival for several years. And that was another way of getting to know people, because it was talking to people from different organisations, putting floats together. And we had for several years in the 1980s a Carnival fortnight. I think one year we had 18 events that we ran as part of Wivenhoe Carnival, and a programme that was put together of different things like cabaret. And I just got to know lots of people in the artistic world in Wivenhoe, in the sense of performing arts. And that was, for me, perhaps more than council, a way of getting to know so many people in Wivenhoe. And I think there were, in those days, and I'm not sure how many there are left, there were about 75 organisations in Wivenhoe. And I used to maintain a list of all the chairmen, secretaries, treasurers. And I knew so many people on that list. That was, and how I got to know what was going on in Wivenhoe so much. And that kind of helped me as a councillor as well.
And has that been lost now, do you think, Peter? Because I think those organisations are there, but there doesn't seem to be much of a unifying banner of which these different groups can cooperate at the moment. That's just my observation. If that is true, is there a reason, or is it perhaps just a sign of the times, and perhaps, in the 80s people did work together a lot more?
I think pace of life has caused lots of things to change. Attitudes have changed a wee bit. So you've got to maybe work a little bit harder to find out all the organisations that were here. But some people might remember I hijacked an annual town meeting in the 1986 year. I think it was I invited the organisations to fill the William Lovelace Hall with a display board about what their organisation did. And I think we had about 45 organisations. And at that time, I introduced the idea of giving out the cheques from the Mayor's Charity Fund.
Which still happens.
Yes, and I was the first person to do that at an annual town meeting. So the annual town meeting used to be a handful of people, that used to the stalwarts in Wivenhoe, who come and hear what the town council did. And I was determined we're going to have a lot more people at the annual town meeting. So I introduced the idea that the cheques would be given out to the organisations who are going to benefit from the Mayor's Charity Fund.
Which, if nothing else, means it's an incentive for those organisations to turn up to actually collect their cheque.
Absolutely.
Which fills the Lovelace Hall up.
Absolutely.
Which I went to the one in April of this year, and it was standing room only, so hopefully that is testament to what you put in place.
Yes, yeah, so we transformed the concept of the annual town meeting, and it was one of the things that anyone who reads Nick Butler's book on Wivenhoe, got a mention in the book about Peter Hill filled the William Lovelace Hall for the first time with the annual town meeting with this exhibition of all the organisations as well as people receiving cheques. So it was one of the small things I'm proud of, I guess.
So in the early to mid-80s, as a newly elected town councillor, maybe it's worth actually also mentioning the election itself. One thing which disappointed me slightly, and as a bystander I could have put my arm in the air and thrust myself forward, but there wasn't any elections for the previous council, and two councillors were co-opted, which I understand was quite a vigorous process. But in your period, has there been a history of elections, and were they fought quite competitively?
Yes, there were, but part of the reason for that is that the council was much smaller in those days. It was just 9 people on the council, and the council was increased to 11 people, and then this year was 13 people. So to try and find more than 13 people to have an election was quite a tough order. And I think the political process has got a bit damaged in this country, that it's fairly brave when people stand up and say they admit what their politics are. So I think that where the politics was much... It was different, let's rather put in those terms, in the 1980s. So the political parties would try and find candidates to put them forward for town council. And without that political process, trying to find people to stand for town council, just trying to get people to be willing to go and discuss planning applications and dull, boring things that councils sometimes have to discuss, as well as more controversial, more interesting things, means you're a brave person in a way if you put yourself forward for the town council.
And one of the themes I detect now currently around Wivenhoe with the town council is, I think, frustration. I'm not sure if the town councillors find ladies and gents that they are, or maybe search frustration, but I sort of do feel that then they're tied by the borough council, and the borough council is tied by the county council, and the county council, it's all money from central government. And so really Wivenhoe Town Council is right at the bottom of this economic and political food chain. Was that structure always the same throughout your period, and did you ever feel as though you were frustrated by different levels above you?
Yes, I can understand what you're saying, but I don't think things have changed. In the pecking order, the town council has very limited powers. On the other hand, it has the freedom to do what it feels is right for Wivenhoe. It can go and bat on behalf of Wivenhoe with the authorities to try and get some sort of greater attention. And I think that there is some innovation things that are going on at the town council right now. So I think... And in terms of transforming Wivenhoe, in terms of changing Wivenhoe, changing cultural attitudes, it can influence things quite a lot. And it will do so by its own personality and the personalities of individual councillors. So I don't think the council has actually changed very much. It's kind of a constant in Wivenhoe over these last 25-plus years.
Okay. Pick you up, Peter. One thing that you mentioned in the Butler book, which is I always keep on mentioning, is a must read. But for me, I think Butler lays out very, very well. The book is The Story of Wivenhoe. And The Story of Wivenhoe, it just seems to plot along, changing, not to any great effect, up until around the 80s, which is your period. And I think the really pertinent chapter is, I think it's called Who Are These People? And I'm as guilty as probably the people that Butler is mentioning. Who are these people that have come into the town? Who are these people? So your own town, your own time at the town council must have coincided and clashed head on with the most intensive expansion that the town has seen in its history. Can we talk about how that was managed and the whole process of that? You know, so in particular, the shipyard, the old port.
Yes, yeah, so the town has been transformed to what it is now, and I would say that I would put a sign up to say Wivenhoe is now full. You know, it's a bit difficult to see how we get many more houses into Wivenhoe. We've got marshland at either end of the quay now, so we can't go further than the marshes. So there's only prospects really for development at the top of Wivenhoe into farmland, but hopefully those are protected through planning policies, and that's where the town councillors can influence strategic planning, and have done so in the last quite a few years. So I think the chances of significant extra development in Wivenhoe is remote. There's clearly infill development and pockets like the present loss of 10 acres, but that was kind of where Hallie Palmer, Dr. Ted Palmer, lived for many years. Those are sort of small pockets that are left, which are being transformed into small developments of houses. But, so the whole planning process has kind of allowed these big schemes of sort of 264 houses on the port site to come about. That is kind of a bit sad in a way, but it's the alternative was to leave a piece of land derelict. So
as is the Roe Hedge case, although Roe Hedge has got an application in. But I think you'd be hard pushed to argue if you were to stand along West Quay and look at the Wivenhoe side. It has been done very, very tastefully. And then you turn around and look at Roe Hedge and you see this derelict warehouse. I know which one I would prefer to see. Hmm. So what's the whole development? So for West Quay and for the shipyard, I remember as a fairly fresh-faced undergraduate in sort of 1991 going down there and drinking a fair bit, so my memory's a bit hazed. But I can remember seeing the early architecture being put in place and the early building around there. When you started off at the town council, was there anything in place there about developing the area?
No, that was in the early 1980s, I guess. Cooks was still a working shipyard until about 1986, and the port site was we had 1984 was it the coal miners' strike, and so we were sort of having pickets and whatever happening at that site. My regret from about 1988, when it was likely that the port site was going to become a development, and there were talk then about houses taking over, they becoming planted on the port site. What I wanted to do was negotiate with the developer and say, if you're going to develop, then I would like you to make a contribution to Wivenhoe. And even if it had been £50,000, that would have made a huge difference, because £50,000 would have been a huge amount of money in those terms. But people weren't willing to talk, to allow me to talk to the developer. The developer was a kind of the devil. People didn't want development at that time, and I can understand why they didn't want it. But today we have something called the Section 106, for £2,000 to £4,000 for every house that's built. If we had the Section 106, we were able to get a contribution towards social housing, and a contribution to a cash contribution towards community resources. Those 264 houses could have been worth in like £500,000 to Wivenhoe today. The town council could have done something really worthwhile.
Do you think that those developments were handled well, or are there any regrets?
Well, I've got personal regrets, but that's the way life was. We didn't have the powers that the borough council has now. This Section 106 only came in after the port site was developed, so there's been no benefit to Wivenhoe as a whole. Except it's brought a new group of people into Wivenhoe, rather sort of cosy in a way. It'd be interesting to for you to interview someone who's not been involved in Wivenhoe in the way I have, and to hear their views as a new resident. So most of my people, and the people I know and talk to, are people who've lived here for a long time. So to kind of remember the port site before it became a sea of houses. But it has certainly transformed Wivenhoe, and it's, if you look at Wivenhoe from the other side of the river, it looks very, very attractive. And I think it is still a very attractive place. The people who moved in at Wivenhoe have fitted in extremely well.
Yeah, I have these conversations. I've been meeting people, again, I'm in the same situation that maybe you were, Peter, 25, 30 or so years ago, having to forcibly go out and go into pubs, which is such a hard life, and meet people and see new friends. But I've met some wonderful folk sort of down by West Quay. Very, very similar story to myself, in that they've moved from London, and on more than one occasion we've been out sort of drinking by the Rose and Crown and just sitting there and almost like laughing amongst ourselves, saying, look, we live here in Wivenhoe. We find this really hard to believe. And 12, 18 months or so ago, different circumstances, but we were living in London, a very, very much more frantic and harsh, brutal lifestyle. And the feeling that I do detect from people that do live on those new areas is it is one of appreciation, and it is one of, you've built there what is quite a very, very charming place to live.
Yes, and I think I talk about living in Wivenhoe with a capital L. I think you can just reside in Wivenhoe, you can reside in your nice house and enjoy the television and a glass of wine or whatever, or you can get out into the streets and enjoy the quay and the atmosphere of the quay. You can enjoy the June markets, and you can enjoy an art exhibition, or, you know, there's all sorts of things going on in Wivenhoe, and I think that's living with a capital L to my mind. It's just more than just residing here, it's really enjoying the place you live. And so many people and if you look at all the people who are the current movers and shakers and the current people on the town council, there's a lot of people that have moved into Wivenhoe in the last few years who are now taking an active role in this and in the way our community works. And that's to my mind, a great sign that our society is healthy.
Mm. And so with this expansion in housing, obviously, it does also need a matching expansion in services. The health centre is maybe a bit of a moot point. The schools seem to manage okay, but I know from your own personal background, Peter, something which you have also been involved in has been the Broad Lane Trust. So we could talk maybe about how that was set up, what was the need for it. I know it went through a bit of a shaky time, but that seems to be resolved now. So what has been, please, your own involvement with the Broad Lane Trust?
In 1994, the members of the Wivenhoe Town Football Club came to see me and said, Peter, we're about to lose the ground. The owner, David Watts, who was a private owner, he was the managing director of the Wivenhoe Port, and he wanted to sell the ground. He wanted to, it was closing down the port, and wanted to get some money out of his investment in the football club. He put some money into the playing side of the football club, and had done some success in the local leagues in which they played. But in 1994. There was a bit of a battle between the owner of the football club and the football club members, and David was threatening to padlock the gates. And they came to see me and said, what can we do? So we put a plan together, and it was really a plan based on the way in which we run the Scout and Guide Association as a umbrella body that owns the assets. The assets are used by the number of Scout and Guide units, who pay a contribution towards the running cost of the Scout and Guide Hall, and everyone contributes to the proceeds. So that was the model for Broad Lane Sports Ground.
It's quite a strange piece of land from what I know, in that, am I right in saying the whole area of that land is not, it's owned jointly by two different bodies or yes, organisations. So one is, I believe, the Borough Council.
Yeah, so we ended up with a formula. You're right, there are two pieces of land there. One is owned by the Wivenhoe Youth Football Club, and the other one is technically owned by the Borough Council, but leased to something called the Wivenhoe District Sporting Facilities Trust. A bit of an unwieldy name, but it's sometimes nicer to call it Broad Lane Sports Trust. But we deliberately chose the name to reflect it wasn't just a facility for Wivenhoe, it's for the district as well, because lots of people who were supporting Wivenhoe Town don't necessarily come from Wivenhoe Town itself. So we created this umbrella body that all the clubs who were based at Broad Lane Sports Ground would be members of. and all work together towards having a facility that would attract grants, as we did for when we managed to buy the whole thing. We raised by various means about £120,000 to buy the ground from David Watts. That deal was done in my dining room. We celebrated with a bottle of red wine, which is it was 95, I guess. By 96, we created a charity to run the whole thing. So the Wivenhoe District Sporting Facilities Trust became a registered charity that has benefits to tax relief for the football club and other clubs there. We then raised a further £120,000 to pay for the four tennis courts. So Wivenhoe's got the best tennis courts in the whole borough, and the floodlit tennis courts. So we've got a winter league at Broad Lane Sports Ground as well. So with senior football, junior football, and lots of people like Dave Weinmark and others were involved in those early days.
And the next stage is people must be aware of the Broad Lane Future Project, which is a possible expansion and making the whole space available to many more different community groups. A very direct question, Peter. Do you know Mr. X, the mystery guy who has put forward the money? I'm not asking to name him, but would you know off the record who Mr. X is?
No, I don't. So I know the people who have met him, but I have never inquired about his identity.
I ask because there is some mistrust, I think, because I can see possibly why Mr. X wants to remain anonymous. But what he's proposing is a figure of a very, very generous figure of around £1 million plus if the community can match what his plans are and show that they're behind the project. Are you cynical, or is it something which you think could happen?
I think it could happen. I know one of the people who've met Mr. X, and I trust that person. Mr. X does exist as far as I'm concerned. I can understand why Mr. X is not wildly enthusiastic about putting his money into the project. If he's going to put £1 million into something, I'm surprised he hasn't found another project. And I don't know why he's still willing to back the idea. Or maybe, like me, he sees the potential for something to be a bit different, because most sports organisations, most sports facilities require subsidy to run. And what we created with the Wivenhoe District Sporting Facilities Trust, through it being managed by a charity, by lots of people putting in lots of time voluntarily from all of the different clubs, whether it's a football club or the youth football club or from the other clubs, the tennis club, etc., that by putting volunteer effort into running it, and you can keep costs remarkably low. So the formula, the basic formula behind it is proven as far as I'm concerned. Unfortunately, some people get a bit carried away with football. Football tends to be run by emotion rather than by business sense, and paying players to try and get them to win matches to encourage crowds to go there has been something that's been tried a number of times at Wivenhoe Town with only limited success. And I think that the people I've met at who are running the football club these days are much more community-minded than perhaps people in the past, and I'm sure that if everyone gets together, as I think they have, all working towards the same song off the same hymn sheet, and they can create a successful formula up there. I sincerely hope so. That's what's been there since 96 was when we created the charity. So wish them every luck in the world.